Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Sharon.
I had a 40-year porn addiction.
Porn was an unwelcome guest for 32 years of our marriage.
I found hope and freedom when I attended a Gateway to Freedom weekend.
And I found hope and the courage to begin my healing journey while attending Wives Care.
Don't be like us and allow porn to wreak havoc in your lives.
Reach out to Be Broken today.
To learn more about Gateway to Freedom, 3-day intensive for men, and Wives Care online groups, visit BeBroken.org or call 210-822-8201. That's BeBroken.org or 210-822-8201.
So the messy middle is, and I think probably for the rest of our life, we're never going to do this perfectly. So just because something didn't go well doesn't mean it's going to stay in that stage either. There's always a way back to repair.
Good day, friends. Jonathan Daugherty here with another episode of the PSR Podcast, which is a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries. In today's episode, I sit down with Carla Summey, an APSATS coach and couples recovery specialist, to explore the messy middle that couples face after sexual betrayal. Carla shares her personal and professional insights on navigating the emotional ups and downs, rebuilding trust, and redefining relationships. We discuss the importance of emotional regulation, transparency, and patience, emphasizing that recovery isn't linear. And Carla offers hope and practical advice for couples feeling stuck, highlighting the value of community, self-care, and taking small steps forward. It's an honest and encouraging conversation for any couple facing this difficult road. To learn more about Carla and her resources, visit carlasummey.com. For additional resources, you can check out our website at bebroken.org or look at the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And as always, friends, I'm going to invite you to rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now let's dive into today's conversation about the messy middle of recovery from sexual betrayal. Well, all right. I'm here with Carla Summey. Welcome to the program, Carla.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah, so you have actually been connected with our ministry, with our Wives Care ministry, who does amazing work for helping women recover and heal from betrayal trauma. But today we're going to be talking more about the couple experience and kind of the navigation of what happens when a couple who has experienced sexual betrayal in their relationship, and there's disclosure, and there's the decision to say, let's see what it looks like to restore this marriage, what kind of you dub is the messy middle. But before we get to that specific conversation, I'd love for you to just let our listeners and viewers know a little bit about who you are and the work that you do.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm an APSATS coach, and I've been doing that since about 2020. And then I thought I would only want to work with betrayed partners. But it was actually through the disclosure, preparing people for disclosure, that I started helping the betrayer prepare for disclosure. So as I said yes to working with what is usually husbands in my couples, I then just really sensed that there's so much about recovery that is similar for partners as for the men that are trying to recover from unwanted sexual behavior. So I have a lot of empathy. I think that helped, probably helps that my husband and I have had years and years and years of conversation about this topic. So I understand a lot from, you know, his own journey. And then I ended up going and getting the early recovery couples empathy model training through Carol the Coach. And I've done level 1 and 2 of couple-centered recovery with Dr. Jake Porter. So then I started taking on couple clients. And that was really different at first. I think I've been doing that at least 3 years. But it feels a little bit more like I don't have any control of the way that session is going. And so one of the things I do is I have longer sessions. So my couple sessions are 80 minutes because there's a lot of slowing down conversation and helping the couples have the conversations that are scary or tense. And so recently I've been doing more and more couples and enjoying that process as well.
That's great. Well, there's not, there's never going to be enough, you know, competent and well-trained, helpers in this space of ministry and work, because there's a huge need out there. And so thank you for what you're doing in this space. So I was super excited to have you on because of just kind of this phrase that you use to describe a little bit of this process that couples who post-disclosure and choosing to want to restore the marriage, that you call the messy middle. So let's start to dive into that. First of all, the first question I have with you is just understanding that obviously every single couple's particular journey is unique. What, however, does it kind of look like generally speaking for couples that want to choose recovery and restoration in their marriage post, you know, betrayal disclosure?
Yeah, great question. I think the messy middle is a long season, much longer than most of us want to be in a mess. But what I found was once I discovered the APSATS model, most clients come in that initial crisis and they're looking for, you know, help me get that safety and stability. That's usually the disclosure process. And even the husbands like a real formatted, like, do this, do this, do this. It's very task oriented.
Yeah. Give me a checklist, right?
Yeah. Right. So that beginning, if everybody's in it and they're really wanting to work, there's a really good checklist of how to, you know, get a recovery plan going and prepare for disclosure and join a group and all those kinds of things. But I think it really is a lot more individual and not as well charted what happens after both people know the full story. They know, like, you know, the gaps are filled in. Reality is shared, which is really important. But that doesn't mean that you necessarily know a lot about your own wounds and how you got there. So I think there's messiness from the individual work. So whether that's, you know, the partner having trauma even before betrayal trauma, mm-hmm. We don't want to tackle that right away because we're trying to get stability and stabilization from the betrayal trauma. But eventually there's a process of working through the partner's family of origin things as well. The husband, and I'm sorry, but I'm probably going to say he and she.
It's okay, because that's the typical, that's probably the most common typical scenario, at least in our ministry that we deal with, where the husband has been the one that's done the sexual betrayal and the wife is the one that has experienced that betrayal trauma.
Yeah, and that's my clients for sure. So yeah, the husbands don't, even when they're preparing disclosure, they don't always know the whys. You know, disclosure is a lot about the what. And so after you've checked that box, there's years and maybe really for the rest of our life, we're learning and growing about our own situations and what our personalities and what situations are more risky for us. So there's definitely the two individuals that can be at very different places in their own. I use the word recovery. I embraced recovery. I love the idea of continuing to grow. I don't know, the word recovery is a little bit funny to me because a lot of the time I'm learning things that I didn't ever know. So it's not like I recovered something, but I'm exploring right. and practicing and learning new things. I really like the analogy of the three-legged stool, which was something in the first book I read back in 2010 about, you know, there's his recovery, her recovery, and then the couple's recovery. And so I think the stability of the coupleship is more like that stool. And so it gets pretty wobbly at times, depending on which leg of the stool is. It could even be for good reasons. Somebody's growing a lot, but then you're in two different places. Or I think about the spiritual crisis involved in betrayal trauma. You know, you maybe have shared the same kind of faith in Jesus your whole marriage, and then this rocks everybody. Yeah. And so then all of a sudden, you know, like church gets hard for a lot of partners.
So let's talk for a minute about
uneven.
You mentioned kind of using that three-legged stool analogy. Let's talk for a minute about what are some of the most common maybe assumptions that a couple brings into that recovery and restoration process, even when they've gone through maybe a good disclosure. I like what you said. A lot of times that's dealing with the what. Hey, let's just get all the what out on the table here so we know what happened. But it doesn't necessarily explore a lot of that, the why, the things that are behind that. But then when you start to go a little bit further into, okay, there's individual work, right? The his, hers, and ours. What are some of the typical assumptions, especially when it comes to that ours piece, that maybe gets couples tripped up when, and that maybe really magnifies the whole idea of messy middle, that they've got assumptions of what that ours piece is supposed to look like, maybe based on what they're doing in their own individual work.
Yeah. Well, I think some couples, I can remember at the first while just wanting to get back to what it used to be. So if you actually thought you had a good marriage, I think that ours part is sometimes just rushing to try to get back to feeling stable and connected. I don't think that works. I feel like a part of why I do what I do is I jokingly say we did everything the wrong way. And so we can say what not to do, but I definitely, you know, just wanted everything to be okay and rushed past a lot of my own listening to my gut. I, you know, kind of raising anything that felt unsafe, I just kind of pushed it away. So I think some people rush to make things feel better. Mm-hmm. But then I think there is more information out there now about the idea that the relationship has to look different, which is good. I'm glad people are hearing that concept. But that is challenging too, because if you didn't see a healthy relationship growing up, or if all you know is it's not supposed to look the way it did before, what parts can you take with you that actually were good? Sifting through the, you know, what can I trust? What can't I trust? Trying to look different. Often people don't have a vision for what that looks like. They don't even know where they're aiming at. On the husband's side, I hear pretty often an idea that some of these guys just want their wife to accept that now I'm the new guy. Just accept me as the new version of myself. Like all of that is done. I'm done with that. And so that's also that rushing to get to something different that is well-intended, but just doesn't work, because you can say that you're different, but something about you created that old relationship. So it's really hard to believe that when a disclosure reveals, you know, a lifelong pattern. And then, so even if sobriety is real and maintained, it's, I hear a lot of wives like almost not believing that, because it's like,
oh, sure.
I've had such a hard trouble, you know, 2 months ago, you were having all of these issues and now you're not having them anymore. And that doesn't seem believable. So then it's that little piece of like sharing, to be able to communicate about triggers, or, and I think with, even with the husbands, it's a lot of emotional triggers. So you might have good sobriety. You might not be, you know, really struggling with needing to click on something you shouldn't, but you're a real human being and your wife still sees when you get flustered dealing with a kid or coming home cranky at the end of the day. And that feels familiar. So that feels triggering, even if you're not acting out. So there's so much emotional work about learning how to feel your emotions, communicate your emotions, let people's emotions be theirs without it affecting the partner or each other as spouses.
Exactly. Yeah. In the recovery community, we call that being a dry drunk. The idea of you may not be behaviorally acting in your addiction, but you haven't done anything of dealing with the underpinnings of what drove you to that addiction. And so I do want to eventually get to a place where we talk about what are some of those growth markers? Like, what does it look like when a couple is really making good strides in kind of that hours piece and kind of moving through the messy middle in a healthy way? But first, let's continue to talk more about just some of the common struggles that are associated with what you call the messy middle. Like, what are some of the challenges, the roadblocks, the difficulties that couples have in that messy middle?
Yeah, so I think right away about emotions, learning to name them, identify them, feel them. That you can't express emotions if you don't know what you're feeling. And partners, there's a lot of partners that struggle with that as well. So that's a place where you can engage almost like as friends and help each other if you're willing to be vulnerable and, you know, start doing couples check-ins where you're okay. Well, here's my feelings wheel. What am I today? Or you know, I had a partner this morning say, I feel I'm the whole wheel. So often the partner is the whole wheel and the betrayer is like numb or shut down and not sure. So that's kind of funny. But if you can identify and name the emotion, that's step one. Then there's what do you do with it? So a really big piece that I'm finding on both sides of individual recovery that can become really great couples recovery is anything that is helping nervous systems regulate and sharing language around like, hey, do you need to take a breath? And now you could say that in a really sassy way and that could start a fight. But if you're embracing it together of like, hey, take a breath, or, you know, a lot of us do this butterfly tapping, or even a timeout. If you can have an agreement as a couple that if one or both of you are getting flustered, but you're willing to just be like, hey, let's hit pause. We'll come back in 20 minutes, go get a drink of water, go outside if you can, go for a walk, come back. That can save so much of that, the messiness of, it's almost like the emotions ping pong off of each other. One person gets dysregulated, then that triggers either direction. We trigger each other emotionally, but we can also start practicing how to learn to co-regulate and actually have each other as a teammate of like, okay, hey, you seem like you're really stressed. Would a hug be helpful? Or do you need to go by yourself in the room for a while as a friend, not as somebody trying to be controlling?
Yeah, or trying to just create distance. So talk a minute. You just used a word, teammate. That's something that I can imagine is maybe a challenging lens to see one another through, especially for the betrayed spouse. Because it can feel like until you feel a sense of safety, it's hard maybe to see the one who's hurt you as a teammate. And the other way too, it can be hard to see the one who is, you know, kind of withering and struggling and angry and hurt to feel like, oh, that's my teammate. I need to go hug my teammate. It's like, so can you talk about maybe the challenges that represents of starting to see each other in that way? And maybe specifically, because you were talking all about emotional regulation, like that's a huge component of what is necessary. And I can tell you as a man who has been on the side of the one who's betrayed my spouse, part of my whole recovery, getting into that understanding of emotional regulation, you might have well just been trying to teach me how to understand hieroglyphics or something. I mean, I just was, was completely foreign. So I want you, I'm asking Carla, if you'll take a breath and slow down, because you hit on a few things right there that I think if some in our audience will go, first of all, what was this butterfly technique? What was this? And you mentioned teammate, like how do we get to some of these places? And can you unpack a little bit of that for us, especially what does it take to get to that teammate lens? Like, we're actually on the same team working towards some same goals and wanting to help each other. And it's challenging when there's been such a deep betrayal in the relationship.
Yeah, it is. I think I would go back to the invitation to individual recovery as a first place to start practicing these things. Like, you know, if wives care ladies have each other, they can be dysregulated together and experience by the end of the meeting, oh, I feel better, right? And I know that some of the men's groups do that as well. So first of all, we have to have some practice. And I think groups is absolutely one of the best things. It's an invitation. I think that a lot of the betrayers recognize they better go get in a group. I think it's easier for wives to think, why do I have to get in a group? Why do I need help? Why, you know, he's the one that did this. So I would frame it as an invitation to find a safe group where people get it and you can talk about it and experience a healthy group where you come in dysregulated and you leave with that, oh, I feel so much better. So, and I guess, yeah, the teammate aspect is hard too, because I'm going to always say I want the partner to really lean into discernment and listening to their gut. Eventually, this is part of the mess. I think it took me probably 7 years of being in active recovery with weekly groups and therapy and all the rest of it before I really, really integrated a concept of, okay, I believe the Holy Spirit lives in me. And also, like, our body works the way it's supposed to work. And those gut fears and sensations or challenges are something that deserve attention, even if it just means slowing down and getting quiet and bringing it to the Lord to say, like, what does this mean? Something, our gut doesn't use words. This is what I learned the hard way. It's like, I like to stay in my head. I like to think about things and concepts and read books about everything I'm going through. But that's very different than one feeling what I'm going through. That's different. That's a lot harder and more painful, more vulnerable than just, you know, reading about it. And, but then the second part about gut, of just in my body, getting quiet and feeling it and checking that in of, like, do I trust that this could be something that the Lord is showing me? And so that I definitely don't want to push being a teammate on a partner if her gut is thinking, I don't know if it's safe. So,
yeah. And can you talk a little bit? Yeah, because I think you're hitting on something that I think is really important for couples to hear. And I want you to talk a little bit about this, because this, I think, really is part of some of the definition of the messy middle, is that it's not a constant straight line forward. Can you talk about how there's sometimes it's, hey, two steps forward, one steps back, three steps forward, four steps back, and how it's kind of in fits and starts. And and that it's okay if you are in a season where I got to take two steps back and get back to safety before I feel like I can move towards teammate. Can you talk a little bit about just the idea of the nature of the herky jerkiness of the messy middle?
Yeah, the two step forward, one step back is very real. And then that's happening individually as well as a couple, right? Because if the partner is feeling unsafe, she might pull back, and then suddenly you are experiencing her as, like, avoiding or hiding in her room again. And then, you know, 2 days later, she might be asking for a hug or, you know, wanting to go for a walk or do something together. And it's kind of eggshelly for a while too. You know, I don't know, that safety and stability is that first piece. Using the APSATS model, if something's not feeling right, always go back to safety and stability. So is there something, did you observe something that reminded you of old behavior? Like you said, is it dry drunk behavior or some, is it just, you know, emotional tension? Is work more stressful? Okay, well, what does that mean? But a lot, most people are like one foot in safety and stability. And then the next step is that kind of where you kind of have grief and you're kind of meaning making of like, what is my story? What is our story? So going back and forth between those is a lot. I mean, I don't want to, it's not timing. There's not time on this stuff.
Yeah.
But it was years for us. So,
yeah.
But it's not all bad, right? Like partly like what you were saying about learning hieroglyphics, it's probably because it's like you don't even know what you're practicing at first. And then as you stay in the environments that are helping teach you, or as you have real friends from recovery groups that you can now, hey, you know, this just happened. What have you guys done in that situation? You open up possibility of better ideas or new things to try. Definitely reading books. There's so much great, I mean, the podcasts now, there's so many great ways to learn something, but learning it and doing it are just very different animals. And so the practicing and doing is, like you're saying, it's just not a direct path.
Let me ask a question. I mentioned earlier about how, you know, every couple's journey is unique. However, but there've got to be some things that need to happen for every couple if they're actually going to navigate through the messy middle successfully, if we can put it that way. What are some of those key things that would indicate to a couple we are making progress through the messy middle?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to put a lot of that responsibility onto the betrayer. I think transparency is different than sobriety. So get your sobriety, get that recovery plan, but also, I guess, really look at your wife as somebody who wants you to succeed, because she really, really does. And give her glimpses of like behind the curtain, what's going on in your head. I'm glad that you're sober. I am. But what about, you know, what was the hardest thing from your day? Or was there something that made you afraid that you were going to relapse or slip, or, you know, did somebody come across your path that was unsafe? I think the tendency at the beginning is to try not to share things that are going to trigger the partner because it's scary and she gets worked up. But that transparency piece of, hey, if my husband has to take a call with a female that I don't know, I'm going to hear about it because he's not hiding it. So transparency is so much more than just, you know, staying sober. I've seen some good strategies like, I'm going to account for my day. If using your time on your addiction was a thing, being extra transparent about what your calendar looks like, what your hourly life looks like if you're outside of the home, that's trust building. So offering things to your wife about your life without her having to pull it out of you or ask or demand, that is a big shift.
I was actually going to say the word that we use in our ministry all the time when we're instructing husbands on this is when it comes to your personal recovery and when it comes to you really serving your wife well, you must take the initiative. So the initiative is the word that we use all the time. It's like, don't have her set up a counseling appointment for you. Don't have her find a group. Don't have her open your Bible for you in the mornings. Like, no, you take the initiative to say, I'm choosing and I'm owning wanting to be a different man and wanting to actually live that way. And then to your point of transparency, it means all of those things that you're doing need to be open to your wife in conversation. Well, what did you learn in the scriptures today? What did you learn in your group? You don't have to share every detail of what goes on in a group. There's confidentiality there, especially with the other guys. You don't share the other guy's stories with, you know, but did you get an insight? Was there a new word that you learned? Was there, you know, so I love what you're saying there. Transparency is a huge part of that. Are there any other things that are indicators for couples saying, all right, progress is being made here in the messy middle?
Well, I like that you added that initiation because that's huge. I think it's also the ability to hear what can sound like criticism, right? So we know that most betrayers have shame and a lot of it. And here's the good news about that. That means you were actually acting outside your value system, right? Like if you were fine with it, that's actually a worse problem. So I'm like, it's right. Actually okay that you feel ashamed of your behavior. Shame keeps you focused on yourself. And so if your wife were to say like, oh, you know what? Actually, I saw a TV show last night. This is a real life. Like we're how many years? We're like 16 years from first D-Day. And there was just, it was some stupid episode of Seinfeld that we're watching last night. And I was just annoyed. It wasn't like a triggered, like I'm like really activated. It's more just like the gut punch of like, why is culture always making light of this kind of stuff? And I was like, I'm really sad and triggered because what he's joking about, you actually did. And like, that's how I'm going to bed last night. And I'm saying it to my husband, who in the early days could have easily just been like, either I always called it puppy dog eyes, but it's really like little boy, like collapse, right? Like, oh, I'm such a bad husband or person or whatever. That's not comforting to the wife. Mm-hmm. That's actually kind of scary. It's like, you can't even hear my heart. But being able to be like, oh, I did that. You're right. That sucks. And I'm so sorry that that hurts you. And I'm so sorry I did that. You know, just coming, not hearing it as critical or like even judgmental, but just hearing it as she cares enough to share. She's actually looking to you for comfort.
And I would say what that indicates, and this is how I would encourage a husband to receive that and how it can show that you're really moving through the messy middle well, is it's saying she feels safe enough to share that with me. And therefore, we're making progress. So how am I going to carry that? And can I carry that for her and say, yes, I am a safe enough person for you to share that with me. Yes, the things I did in my past, I have the same view of them as you have. It's disgusting. Exactly. I'm ashamed of
that. Let's agree on that. Yeah.
But like we can actually have that transparency go both ways. So it's not just him being transparent about his recovery journey, but when she feels safe enough to be transparent about her ongoing journey as well, I think those are huge indicators that we're making good progress through this messy middle.
Yeah. And actually, I remember my husband saying one of his CSATs told him, when she, because I was highly dysregulated and I get feisty. So I was like pretty intense. And what the CSAT told him was just hear, don't link on to all the words specifically, because then you can get real defensive if some of the things she's saying are not exactly right. Just hear, she's hurt. So he would just like mantra that in his head over and over while I'm like ranting at him. That seemed like it helped him stay in a posture of thinking about what I'm feeling, not hooking into the, oh, that's right, I did do that, so now I'm, you know, such a bad person.
So, I've got a couple more questions before we kind of land the plane here. I love the phrase messy middle, but you know, middle assumes there's something that's before that and there's something after that. So can you talk about what is it kind of that's maybe after? What's the vision that maybe a couple can have that says, well, if we're in the messy middle, that means there's something beyond the middle. So where are they going? Like, what is the goal, so to speak, of navigating through the messy middle?
Yeah, I think that it's like walking it out that I'm only recently, again, 16 years out, thinking like, I think I kind of know, at least for me, what I want that to be. And as we've talked more and more in the recovery circles about attachment wounds and attachment healing, I think it's creating that, co-creating a relationship where you both feel secure enough that the other person is got your back, you're all in, you are teammates, there's no secrets, like you actually have that intimacy that you maybe thought you had or were always wishing you had, getting to a place where it's more than safety and stability, but it's actual commitment and loyalty and safety where you feel it in your body.
Yeah. Yeah. And even that, I think it's important for couples to hear, even that is not a static destination.
Right.
Even that, there's still more and more exploration that can happen in that. But I think it's just important for couples to hear when you're talking, you know, we're specifically focusing on this messy middle, that it's like, hey, this is not where you land. This is not where you're going to be forever. If you right. keep traveling through this, if you keep learning how to emotionally regulate, co-regulate, if you keep continuing to learn how to be transparent with one another, and even in the two step forward, one step back, you continue to move, you start to kind of, it's like the vision for what's after starts to form as you are moving through the messy middle. You're probably not going to have a clear vision on the front end of right. the messy middle. It's like, you got like, okay, I can only look at my shoes right now. Like, what's the very next step I need yes. to take? I'm not able yeah. to see 15 miles out or even 15 years. It's like, I've got to just do the next thing. But I just feel like even what you're saying about the messy middle and what you're dealing with in that space, there's still such a hopeful message in that. And that's where I want to end, is what would be the message of hope that you have for couples that feel like either they're on the front end of this messy middle, or they feel maybe even kind of stuck in the middle of the middle. What would you have to say as far as kind of the message of hope?
Yeah, I think, you know, life as a journey, recovery as a journey, it's okay to rest. If you're tired, I think that's a really big message that I needed early on, where like it feels like life or death, like I have to do recovery, life or death. I can't miss a meeting for anything. And eventually I got to like, you know what, it's okay to take a vacation from recovery and just do something enjoyable or rest and get renewed. Put the books away for a while. As long as you know you both have an underlying commitment to, you know, continuing the process. But it doesn't have to be 100 miles an hour every single day. It's too much. We're humans. Yes. And then I think, I lost your question there.
But just the idea of, especially hope for couples that are feeling like we're either on the front end of this or we're kind of feeling stuck in there. What would be the, you know, cause I do believe there's hope in the messy middle. It's not like, oh, you're just waiting till you get past it.
Right.
I think there can be hope in it. And so I just want you to share whatever message that you could give to a couple that's in that.
Yeah, I think that one of the most hopeful things is, just because you have a rupture doesn't mean that you're completely torn apart, right? It's that repair process. So I think about the attachment theory, which is based on parents and child, you know, your kid might think they're in really big trouble, but you go, you repair, no, I still love you, and you get through it. So the messy middle is, and I think probably for the rest of our life, we're never going to do this perfectly. So just because something didn't go well doesn't mean it's going to stay in that stage either. There's always a way back to repair. I would say at some point, if you feel stuck, try something different. You know, it's okay to change therapists. We've had different therapists throughout our journey. because we're coming with different goals, right? Like at the beginning, you're just coming to survive. And then at a certain point, I always say, don't pay someone to basically be your friend or have coffee. If you've got friends that you, if you feel like you're getting about as much out of the session as talking with good friends, then it's probably time to find a different person that's going to bring another lens or another perspective. So don't be afraid to try different things. There's also so many really good, what they call somatic experiencing type things that are not talk therapy. So start looking for ways to help your body feel more regulated, the non-talk therapy types of things. There's ask, you know, find somebody to say, like, what would you try next?
Yeah. Well, Carla, this has been a great conversation. Where can our listeners and viewers go to learn more about you and some of the resources that you offer?
Yeah, sure. My website is carlasummy.com. So it's pretty simple. My name's Carla with a K, and Summy is SUMMEY.com. Yeah. And so the messy middle, other than it just describes so much of life, my husband has joined me in doing a couples group that's going to start at the end of March. We've done it before. We'll probably do it again. But it's really a little bit more peer facilitator. It's not a coaching group where I'm giving you a lot of coaching intervention. It's more sharing a topic or a tool that is something that really helped us. For example, the talking boundary script, just having a script so that when I or he has something that he wants to bring up, we can just use the script. And because we both agree to use it, it's not like, ugh, why is she pulling out this piece of paper? It's like, okay, we both pull out the paper and use the talking boundary. So we'll introduce a concept and then we'll talk about it and we open up to people's experience. But the thing that I noticed last year after we did it is it's also the ability of couples to know they're not the only ones that are in the messy middle. So the ability to hear, for partners to hear people that are not their husbands share about what it's like to be in recovery, for the betrayer to have empathy for someone else's spouse, for what they put them through. It's really interesting to be in a co-ed group because a lot of our groups at the beginning, at least, are, you know, just ladies, just men. So I think the community aspect of just knowing you're not alone, you're not the only one, it's kind of, you know, that two steps forward, one step back, and just keeping encouraging each other is a really big part of the group.
Well, this has been a great conversation, Carla. Thank you again for being on the program with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jonathan.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we're going to put those links in the show notes. And so we're always glad that you're with us. And we want you to reach out to us. We want to help you take your next best step to wholeness in Christ. So please connect with us. And we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.